Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
And I'm Lauren Volkbaum.
And in our last episode, we kind of laid the groundwork about what Bitcoin is, kind of refreshing your memory, and also the breaking news at the time of recording about the possible identity discovered of the guy who came up with the whole idea in the first place.
Satoshi Nakamoto, who might in fact be a guy named Satoshi Nakamoto. And this was a surprise. So if you missed that episode, go back and give it a listen.
Yeah, because it'll definitely give you some context for what we're going to talk about today, which is the controversies of Bitcoin. And also, what's in the future, yo?
That's a really great question that many people are asking themselves, because there have been so many controversies over Bitcoin, especially in the past like 3 to 5 months.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, they're just the very nature of Bitcoin, the fact that you get at the coins by either purchasing them at an exchange or you mine them through using computer power to solve mathematical problems. Well, if you're thinking, hey, I've got a computer, I can solve math problems. Well, if you listen to our last episode, you know that you need a lot of computing power because the competition you're up against is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so some people will join mining groups, sort of like almost like a lottery pool, like we were saying in the last episode.
And some people force other folks to join a mining group without them necessarily knowing about it.
By creating botnets, aka, you might have also heard of botnets being referred to as zombie computer armies.
Yes. These are the, if you're a longtime fan of Tech Stuff, you've heard us talk about this. This was one of our first episodes, but essentially what this is when a hacker uses software to get administrative access to someone else's computer. Generally, this is done by fooling the person into installing a program. And then
kind of malware.
Yeah, there's usually a Trojan horse malware that will install a backdoor access point for someone to go over a network and then send commands remotely so that they make your machine do stuff they want it to do.
And there are lots of different ways that hackers use botnets, and one of them is to direct computers to mine for bitcoins. So what they're doing is they're trying to get as many different computers as possible to coordinate in this task, and then the hacker reaps the benefits. So your computer might have actually been the one to mine that bitcoin, but you don't see any of that because it's going to some hacker somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one particularly widespread bit of malware like this was busted back in April 2013. Jonathan actually blogged about it back then.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean it's still one of those things that remains a concern because it's, you know, it's the world of the digital realm. I mean it's one of those things where it's different from our physical world.
Right. And as we alluded to in our previous episode, the fact that all of this is different from our physical world lends bitcoins, I mean that and the fact that they are necessarily decentralized and unregulated, mm-hmm. means that sometimes people use them for less than upright purposes.
Yeah. Okay. So we're gonna lay it down, just be perfectly honest and blunt here, because when I did an episode way back in the day, I think it was it 2011, I think we said in our previous episode, but we kind of danced around it because we didn't really want to address it very much, but it's very much something that we have to talk about. And this is markets that would support illegal trades, and illegal would depend heavily upon where you happen to be in the world, because I guess, you know, laws are different in different places, but
absolutely.
Largely this was mostly focused on drugs, illicit drugs. So, the famous market was the Silk Road. Now, the Silk Road, first of all, it took its name from a historic trade route that connected Asia to Europe.
Right.
And the idea was that this was a market where buyers and sellers could meet anonymously, have these transactions. Bitcoins were accepted there, one of the few places that Bitcoins were accepted, one of the earliest, too. And it was a Tor hidden service. So this meant that you could actually log in and you don't have to worry that you're being tracked or that your identity is out there for everybody. So it was kind of a haven for this sort of activity. So much so that that the illicit activity made up the majority of the things you could buy on the Silk Road. It wasn't just illegal stuff. You could buy legal stuff too. You could go to the Silk Road and buy clothing or computer parts and things like that.
Sure, but one report from The Guardian said that drugs were up to 70% of what was available on that market.
Yeah, at that point you're like, I'm going to an illegal drug store that also has a computer aisle. That's essentially what you're talking about there. So, I mean, and here's the thing, you'll see Bitcoin community folks, some of them, not all of them. I don't want to paint everyone with a broad brush.
Certainly not.
But there were some who would say, look, this is just a free market. The fact that drugs are there that's irrelevant. We're talking about this is where merchants and buyers can get together and exchange goods. It's meant without government interference. On that level, sure. I mean, that intellectually, I can understand what you're saying. But practically, 70% of the stuff there was illegal. So when you strip away the philosophy and look at the reality, you have to be intellectually honest and say, all right, these things are being done to purchase illegal goods. Now, you might think that those goods shouldn't be illegal, but that's a totally different issue.
That is a whole other discussion.
Yeah.
And at any rate, in October of 2013, the FBI got pretty deeply involved.
Yeah, they arrested a man named Ross William Ulbricht on charges of drug trafficking, computer hacking, money laundering, and here's the big one, soliciting murder.
Oof.
Essentially assassination.
Wow.
So they ended up arresting him. They claim that Ulbricht is the man behind the Silk Road, that he was using the handle Dread Pirate Roberts. I do not think it means what he thinks it means, but at any rate, they arrested him. They claimed that he was the guy behind the Silk Road. Ulbricht, for his part, denies it. And the FBI shut down the Silk Road, although almost immediately Silk Road 2.0 popped up into its place.
Certainly, but shutting down the system froze all of the bitcoins that were in circulation in that community,
in the market,
which was some 3.5 million US worth at the time. And the fact that the FBI seized that amount of bitcoin means that they are one of the largest holders of the currency in the world.
Yeah, Nakamoto and the FBI. Boy, that'd be a great children's book. At any rate, so Yeah, there were a lot of people who were not happy about this, including the ones who started up Silk Road 2.0. And Dread Pirate Roberts was active again, presumably being controlled by a different person, assuming, of course, that Ulbricht was, in fact, the original Dread Pirate Roberts. So Silk Road 2.0 on February 13th, 2014, made these would-be drug dealers unhappy a second time because they announced that they had been the target of hackers and that the escrow accounts of the Silk Road 2.0 had been cleaned out of $2.7 million worth of bitcoins. Following Silk Road 2.0 was another market called Utopia, which not only allowed for the sale of drugs, but opened it up to guns as well.
Because when you're called Utopia, that's really the clear avenue.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's, I think there might have been some irony there. Anyway, they were also shut down just days after the site launched. The police held a sting operation and shut that one down. Now, here's the thing. As soon as one of these markets goes down, I'm sure other ones pop up because the demand is there.
Oh, absolutely.
So until you get to a point where either the demand is not there or people feel that there's just not a
too much risk
and not enough reward, then it's just going to keep happening.
However, decentralizing it, you could argue, is a worthy cause if you believe that shutting down this kind of thing is a good plan.
Right, right. There are people in the Bitcoin community who say, hey, this shows that Bitcoins work. Because you can shut down the markets that aren't playing fair and everything else can keep on operating. However, the rest of the world is saying this is a currency where the markets can get shut down and then all your money goes away, which can, of course, reduce confidence in that currency. So these events are hurting Bitcoin in the sense that its value can suffer because people feel less confident of it.
It can, but that's not always the practical outcome of this kind of thing. And we'll talk a little bit about that later on, I think. Meanwhile, in November of 2013, in response to all of this hubbub, it was basically right after the FBI had shut down Silk Road. The U.S. Senate held a hearing on Bitcoin and the general potential of virtual currencies. The Federal Reserve Chairman at the time, Ben Bernanke, released a letter ahead of the hearing that acknowledged that that the government, you know, of course, does not have authority to supervise virtual currencies like Bitcoin, but also said that this kind of stuff, and I quote, may hold long-term promise, particularly if the innovations promote a faster, more secure, and more efficient payment system. And that idea, along with general curiosity about it, seemed to really be the moral of this Senate hearing, which was really interesting to me. There was, of course, concern raised about Bitcoin being used to drive crime, but the fact that people in the government were open to the concept and thought that it was pretty cool and not only, you know, to be used as a marker for stuff that should be shut down, I think it's great.
Yeah, there's an unequal distribution of savviness in the government.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And we're going to cover a little bit more of that in just a second. Cause, you know, some people, they get it. For one thing, you know, once you open a door on the internet, that door's open, right? I mean, even if you try and remove everything, once it's on the internet, the idea is out there. And as we've said, Bitcoin is not the only digital currency out there.
Right.
And digital currency certainly is poised to be very disruptive. And you know, this Bitcoin is kind of the perfect example of how disruptive it can be in the extreme. It doesn't even have to be that extreme to be disruptive.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's CONCUR.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
So it's interesting, and that Senate hearing where we had senators talking frankly about this kind of stuff lent a lot of legitimacy to Bitcoin in the eyes of the community and really the world outside the community. A lot of people who were curious about this currency but didn't know a whole lot about it.
However, that does not mean that we suddenly entered a beautiful dream state in which no one was using Bitcoin for nefarious purposes.
And sometimes they may or may not have been fully aware of how nefarious they were. So Charlie Shrem is he's a former head of a company called BitInstant, who was on a trip. He was for the past couple of years been living a pretty lush lifestyle, a lot of wining and dining, flying around. This fellow from Brooklyn was living the high life. And the reason was he was using, you know, BitInstant was this company that was kind of a handler for Bitcoins, could facilitate Bitcoins and really acting as like a transaction house. Now, he was arrested as soon as he got off a plane under charges that he had committed conspiracy to commit money laundering. And also he failed to report suspicious activity. Plus, he had a charge of acting as an unlicensed money transmitter. Now, all of those charges are from his alleged business with with a man named Robert Faea, who was accused of being a Bitcoin merchant who was working with drug dealers to buy and sell items on the Silk Road. And so it's kind of there's an email exchange between Shrem and Faea that's the key of this case. That so Faea's approach was that he was trying to transmit large amounts of money in Bitcoins. And the law is still trying to catch up in the United States particularly, but across the world in general, with the existence of Bitcoins and how is that handled in transmissions when it's not actual U.S. dollars.
Right.
And in general, if you're considered to be a money transmitter once you reach a certain level. So a lot of people were telling Shrem, hey, you know, let's make the top amount, 1,000 Bitcoins. You can't transmit more than that because more than that, you're going to get attention.
You're going to attract attention, yeah.
And then they're going to say you are an unlicensed money transmitter, which in fact is one of the charges. But this guy, Faea, was doing a lot of business with him. And eventually Shrem, I guess, was feeling really pretty comfortable with the whole thing. And they were possibly transmitting as much as 10,000 or more Bitcoins
in
a week.
Goodness. Wow.
So,
yeah,
it eventually got the attention of the government. And they went after him.
Yeah.
So,
although part of that Senate hearing included the canny observation that cash is probably still the best medium for laundering money.
Yeah. And in fact, that was that would come back in February 2014 following this whole BitInstant and Shrem thing. A U.S. senator proposed that the United States put a ban on Bitcoins, which doesn't work when you're talking about a decentralized virtual currency.
Yeah, you can't really ban something that isn't technically legalized in the first place.
But in this case, it was funny because, you know, you had other senators saying this doesn't make any sense. And in fact, I propose we ban currency because, as it turns out, currency is often used for illegal activities. In fact, if you look at currency, the U.S. dollar versus the Bitcoin, boy, dollars are used in crime way more frequently.
All the time, and every day.
So we got to get rid of that. And that was, I mean,
that's about where that news story
ended,
I think.
It was very much a kind of, you know, wah, wah, sad trombone kind of moment. Then we get to the hacking stories.
The bigger hacking stories, because we previously mentioned
Silk Road 2.0.
Well, no, and also the botnet kind of stuff of individual hacking, but there is, of course, hacking of bigger fish, bigger money fish. Yes.
Exactly. Cause Bitcoin, the currency, they're very quick to say that the keepers of the Bitcoin are quick to say that the currency itself is not what has been hacked.
Sure.
It's not someone has figured out how to unravel the Bitcoin so that they can make copies of it, which was one of the big fears about digital currency.
Right.
Yeah, because people think, hey, if I download a song, I can make copies of that song for all of my friends, which is exactly what the music companies don't want me to do, but I'm totally going to do it anyway. What would stop me from doing the same thing about downloading a Bitcoin and then making lots of copies? So that has remained safe. However, institutions that are dedicated to handling bitcoins have not had the same level of safety and security.
Absolutely.
So one of the big ones, you've probably heard it. It was a Japanese company called Mt. Gox,
which was originally a Magic the Gathering card exchange.
Yeah. That's so weird.
But at any rate, I believe it was in January of 2014.
Oh, man. This was a big one, right? This was the one where they were robbed. Hackers had managed to exploit a security vulnerability in the Mt. Gox exchange. Now, an exchange, think of an exchange as a place where you can exchange currencies. So you could purchase bitcoins or you could sell off bitcoins at this exchange. They would base the value on whatever the market would bear at that time. Well, the hackers had been able to exploit a security vulnerability for the course of a couple of years, actually. It was just that the Mt. Gox folks kind of figured it out eventually, gradually, and then the news broke, and then that's when everything really fell apart.
Yeah, February 2014, by the way. I mistook that January.
Well, it had certainly been happening before February.
Yes.
But it wasn't announced till then, yeah. And it turned out that they lost 750 bitcoins that belonged to customers, plus an additional 100 bitcoins that belonged to the exchange itself. And at the time, that was about $500 million worth of bitcoins.
Oof.
If you took it at the value of bitcoins in US dollars at the time the news was announced, keeping in mind these thefts had been going on for a while as hackers had found this vulnerability.
Right.
So that was pretty much the end of Mt. Gox, at least maybe not the end, but it certainly sent them into the equivalent of bankruptcy in Japan.
Right.
In fact, the CEO had to step forward and bow and apologize to customers because that's the custom in Japan. And the last I heard, the plans are that he will step down once a suitable replacement is found for him. There are other companies that are even in worse shape than that.
Yeah, just a couple weeks later, Flexcoin, which is a kind of bank for bitcoins, had to shut down after being hacked and losing how many? 896 bitcoins?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, by this time, the value of those bitcoins were less valuable than the ones from the previous one because Bitcoin had taken quite a hit in its value. So yes, there were more bitcoins stolen in the Flexcoin story, but they were,
they weren't worth quite as much.
Yeah. They were worth less, because confidence was lower. And it also was a, bank in quotation marks because...
Well, it's not technically a bank because it is necessarily uninsured.
Yeah.
That's part of the whole anarchist package.
Right. It isn't beholden to some government agency or some other corporate entity. And so because they weren't insured, there's no way to recover that money.
Right.
Yeah. So that money is gone. And as a result, the company is shutting down. The only bitcoins that they retained were in what they called cold storage. They had two different styles of storage. There was the hot wallet, which was called that because the the Bitcoins were active on network servers that were connected to the internet. And the reason for that was so that they would be available for transactions.
Oh, right.
Because you don't want that transaction to take forever.
You don't want to have someone to have to go physically hook a hard drive up to a server in order to access your Bitcoin every time. But that cold storage is very much the Battlestar Galactica kind of the new.
Okay. I'm looking at you
virgin.
Blankly. I'm like, what is this big silver Cylon or is this sexy Cylon?
Well, it's about sexy Cylons.
Okay, all
but,
right. Okay.
But I'm referring, of course, to the part in Battlestar Galactica, the new series, in mm-hmm. which a few members of the government had started going like, you know, we really shouldn't have computer networks or large networks hooked up to other large networks because that's a terrible plan.
For security purposes. So, and that's exactly what they were doing with cold storage in mm-hmm. that they were essentially having these on servers that were not connected to the internet. And they said, you know, it's really hard to steal money when that money's not connected to the internet. It's not impossible. You could use some social engineering and get direct access to the actual machine and be able to do it that way.
Sure, but that is much more difficult.
Yeah, that's Mission Impossible risky, as opposed to the net risky.
Yes.
If I could mix my terrible Hollywood depictions of stealing stuff. Anyway, Flexcoin said it's going to work very hard to make sure that the coins in cold storage get to the valid owners of that currency before they shut down totally. So you would think that because we're talking, you know, we're recording this in March 2014, we're talking about a story that broke in late February 2014. Clearly, we wouldn't have any more stories to talk about hackers getting access to Bitcoins.
Yeah, no, we do.
Yeah, because it turned out that this morning when I was looking at the news, one of the items was that actually it was this afternoon. It was even later than this morning. There was a company called Poloniex, P-O-L-O-N-I-E-X, Poloniex, I guess. They lost around 50 grand worth of Bitcoins in U.S. dollars. The actual number of Bitcoins lost were 76.69. Like we said in our previous episode, Bitcoins can be divided down into teeny tiny numbers.
Mm-hmm.
They lost 76.69 Bitcoins, which represents about 12.3% of all the Bitcoins they had in storage. So their solution temporarily is to reduce everyone's account by 12.3% to distribute the loss across all customers.
That's a terrible way of covering a loss.
Right. You might think, but my money wasn't stolen and now you're stealing my money. Now, it's supposed to be temporary. They are supposed to work at trying to recover in some fashion the value of those Bitcoins and restore it to everybody so that this distributed loss is not felt so keenly and that it's eventually restored. But yeah, you would imagine that this would probably make some customers a little miffed.
Certainly. I've seen some online responses to that miffedness of people just going like, you participated in a currency designed for thievery and you were surprised when it attracted thieves. And yeah. I think that that's a little bit harsh, but perhaps an interesting point.
Yeah, there's more than a little smack talk. But, you know, we've got some more we want to say about the crazy shenanigans, what goes on with this crazy currency. But before we do that, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Now, we mentioned before that one of the other controversies, or at least one of the other concerns about Bitcoins, is how do they fit in with the world of taxes? Because it's a decentralized currency, it's not dependent upon any government. However, you are using it to do business. You may be doing business, at least, you know, the equipment you use may be within the confines of a particular country. I'm pretty sure you haven't figured out how to put a server someplace beyond the reach of all law.
Right. Most servers are not physically in the clouds.
Yeah. Maybe you found some way. Maybe you bought an island and it's your own little sovereign nation, in which case you can skip forward a little bit in this.
If it does, call us, because that sounds like an awesome party.
Yeah, especially if that island's like somewhere near the equator, I will totally go. But anyway, the problem here is that governments don't really know how to deal with this properly in the sense of how would we tax the use of Bitcoins. Could we tax it? Should we tax it? I think most governments say, yeah, we should totally tax
it. Of course we should tax it.
Now, what is not beyond question is making money through the exchange of Bitcoins. Because if you are exchanging Bitcoins for other currencies and you're making money that way, that's something that the government, at least in the United States, will totally tax it.
Right. The old buying low, selling, or yes,
buying low, selling high. Yeah, no, you had it right.
I had a moment of terrible doubt.
Yeah, well, I do whenever I look at the markets.
This is why I don't play the stock market, probably.
No, playing is the right word for it. Yeah, so the idea here, of course, is that if I invest in Bitcoins, like I'm not mining, if I'm actually
using them as a
Commodity.
Exchange, right?
Yeah, I've purchased.
Or not as an exchange, but yes.
Yeah, I've purchased some Bitcoins using U.S. dollars. So now I have the equivalent in Bitcoins available to me, and then the value increases over time, and then I sell those Bitcoins to get U.S. dollars again and thus make a profit. I could be taxed on that. So that's, and in the future, we may see taxes being applied more broadly across different types of transactions.
Mm-hmm. So that's another problem with Bitcoins in general. And the biggest one is kind of related, I think, because it's all about the volatility of that market, of the exchange market, of how much a Bitcoin is worth in, forgive me, but real dollars.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, or just value. You could just say, what's the value of a Bitcoin? What can a Bitcoin get me? And the truth of the matter is that changes so quickly and so dramatically, even over the course of a day, that it's hard to answer that question in a meaningful way. I mean, we've seen Bitcoin's value go from around a dollar per Bitcoin U.S. to $1,200 U.S. per Bitcoin.
Yeah. In the span of 2013 alone, it went from between 12 and 13 bucks to $1,242 per coin on November 29th, and then had crashed back to under 600 by late December.
So, in other words, here's how I want to put this. My argument that I always make, and I've made it multiple times, and I've debated this with other people in the technology space, I say that Bitcoin's not really a currency. It's more like a commodity. It's more like investing
like
in gold.
Like a stock. Yeah.
It's something where you know, it you could use it to exchange, but that's almost more like bartering than a currency, because the value changes so dramatically.
Well, although, I mean, any money that you're using is a little bit imaginary and you're technically only
sure.
bartering with it.
But again, that one of the benefits of having a regulated currency is that the government can take steps to try and keep the value as consistent as possible. It doesn't always work, because there are situations where, you know, inflation will get out of control, maybe due to external circumstances. That does happen. We've seen it happen across the world.
Certainly. But I guess the thing that you're arguing, and it's a fair argument, is that if you're going to believe in a money system, then the more official and grounded that belief is.
So the example I have here is, let's say that dollars behave the same way that bitcoins have behaved over the last couple of years. And I have a $5 bill in my hand, and I'm peckish, and I decide I want to go out and buy myself a slice of pizza.
Mm-hmm.
So I go outside, and there's a pizza vendor, and he's selling slices of pizza, and it's $5 a slice. And I think, well, you know, I'm hungry. It's exactly what I want. To me, this slice of pizza is probably worth the $5. A little more than what I would normally pay, but okay.
But that's okay. Sure.
So I hand over my hard-earned $5 bill, and he hands over his hard-earned slice of steamy pizza. And then I devour it, and I go on my merry way. The next day, the value of that $5 bill now has the equivalent buying power of what $500 would have gotten me the day before. So in other words, it's still a $5 bill, but now it can buy
$500 worth of stuff.
Yeah, from the previous day.
From the previous day.
So,
right.
So in other words, I in my mind, I'm thinking, yesterday I bought a $500 slice of pizza. No pizza in my life has ever been that good. And I've been to Sorrento, Italy, when I had amazing pizza there. It was not worth $500 a slice.
I can imagine some really good truffle oil. I don't know. But
you know,
yeah.
I maybe $12. Maybe. If I were feeling like hoity-toity, this is like a chic place and I'm there
fancy
to be
pizza.
Seen. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. But not $500 a slice. So the point I'm making is that the volatility makes you nervous about spending the currency. I would be reluctant to spend my bitcoins for fear that I would miss out on the next giant jump in value. So that if I ended up, you know, having like 3 or 4 bitcoins and I'm thinking, oh wow, this is worth $55 United States money, I'm gonna exchange it now. And then a year later it's worth $3,600, I would be a little perturbed at myself. I'd be upset. And it discourages people from using it as a currency. They might use it to invest and they might hold on to stuff. And some of the markets we talked about, some of the illegal markets might use bitcoins for currency because of the other.
It's easy.
Yeah, it's easy. But it's, you know, if the very basis of your currency discourages you from using it, then it's not successful as a currency. That's not the fault of Bitcoin itself. The fault of that is with the market, because the value of something is based upon its demand. If demand is high, the value is high, especially if you compare it against the supply. If the supply is low and demand is high, that thing is valuable,
mm-hmm.
right? And in some cases, we see things that manipulate markets so that you have an artificial value on something, because it looks like supply is low and demand is high, even if supply is also high.
Diamonds?
Anyone? Yeah. Yeah, if you ever want to really get disillusioned, look into the diamond business and see how there is no shortage of diamonds, and yet they're being treated like they're this incredibly precious resource.
I think I'm nearly positive that one of our fellow podcasters here at How Stuff Works has done an episode on that.
Yeah, and I know that there are articles on howstuffworks.com that go into deep detail, and they're fascinating and upsetting.
It's insulting and terrifying.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, and it's the kind of thing where it behaves like a stock, like a commodity. And, you know, after the news about Mt. Gox broke in February, on that exchange at any rate, before it was shut down totally, the value of Bitcoins dropped all the way down to something around $220.
Jeez.
Per Bitcoin.
That's pretty dramatic.
Yeah. Since then on most, U.S. exchanges, it's hovering right around, $680, or it was as of Tuesday. Right now it's around $660, because that's how it does.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the thing, is that you see these stories too, and these stories start to mount up, and there are two big pathways that people have started to say, this is what Bitcoin is going to go down. And they are two pathways that go in opposite directions. So you have one population saying the currency is robust. It can survive these controversies. It can survive all these problems. It's not the currency's fault that the bank was robbed. Just as you would say it wasn't the dollar bill's fault if someone robbed a physical bank and stole dollar bills out of it, you would say it was the bank's fault for not having the right security to meet up with the challenge of fighting off these robbers. Same sort of thing, you would argue. These institutions didn't have the security to keep it safe from hackers, but the currency itself was perfectly fine. So those people say everything's going to be fine. We're going to weather the storm. It'll actually end up proving that Bitcoin is a viable currency.
Legitimate currency, right.
And that in the future, this is something we're all going to be using. So you still have the faithful who really believe in that. I'm sure many of them probably hold quite a few Bitcoins.
Sure. And I am honestly, it has surprised me that in the face of Mt. Gox and all of these other robberies that have happened recently, mm-hmm. that the value of Bitcoin has not permanently plummeted,
yeah.
or more permanently over the course of 2 weeks. Plummeted.
Right. And part of this is, you know, again, the value is all based on perception. If everyone loses confidence in Bitcoins, then the value will plummet, like you said. But it's only if people lose confidence in it. If people don't lose confidence in it, if they kind of roll with this, then Bitcoin will remain valuable. It's all based psychologically. So there are other people who say, well, you know, Bitcoin is just doomed to fail. There's an article in New York Magazine that is all about the cult of Bitcoin.
Ouch.
Yeah, it's a really long article. It's very critical of Bitcoin and the Bitcoin culture, and also includes a quote from a computer science professor at Cornell named Ermin Gonsirer, who said that Bitcoin at the moment is in a slump with a community that has become its own parody. The Bitcoin masses, judging by their behavior on forums, have no actual interest in science, technology, or even objective reality when it interferes with their market position. They believe that holding a Bitcoin somehow makes them an active participant in a bold new future, even as they passively get fleeced in the bolder current present. Burn.
Ouch. Sick burn.
Yeah. So these two camps, obviously very much in disagreement about what the future of Bitcoin will be. Honestly, I don't know. I'm frankly, like you, Lauren, I'm kind of surprised that the value hasn't taken a harder hit than what it is at right now, based upon this. I would think that people's confidence
would be so shaken. Yeah,
yes.
That they would have all pulled out, or pulled out more so anyway.
At least the people who aren't like the hardcore Bitcoin community members, like the ones who are really, who have totally bought into that philosophy, that ethos, I can completely understand them being like dedicated to the very end.
Hugging
right?
it like a cold computer teddy bear. Yeah.
Yes. And the investors who are more likely the ones who they are interested in
playing the market.
Yeah.
Who are using it to their advantage as a curiosity.
I could see them being the ones who really have lost the confidence and want to get out. It's not because they don't buy into the philosophy or the ethos. They're buying into it as this is
the
like
money.
Gold.
Right. Yeah.
So,
But they haven't, or not enough of them have. At
right.
Any rate.
So it'll remain to be seen which of those two pathways happen. And again, we will eventually not in the very near future, we will eventually cover other digital currencies and talk about those and how they are similar to and different from Bitcoin. And I do think that we're going to see some digital currency. We may see government regulated digital currencies as well. Who knows? We could have lots of competing currencies out there on the global market. And it may be that it'll take years before it settles into something that is, you know, stable and reliable. It may very well be that we have fractured currencies where if you want to buy things off one market, then you need one kind of digital currency, and another market, you need another. For us video gamers, we're used to this because you can't use Warcraft dollars to buy stuff in EverQuest.
What I really hope comes out of all of this hubbub is a greater interest in and understanding of cryptography and its potential use for monetary systems, because whether or not you want to buy into this counterculture movement, I think that it's a really terrific application for making things more secure.
Exactly, yes. And of course, with quantum computers right around the corner, cryptography is going to become more and more of a challenging field all on its own. But that's another podcast. So we're going to wrap this up. Guys, if you have any suggestions for future topics we can tackle here on Tech Stuff, let us know. Send us a message on many of the social networks we're on. That includes Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr. We have the handle TechStuffHSW. Or if you're old school and you like sending those emails, you can send us an email with the address TechStuff@discovery.com. And Lauren and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.